that's when I was like, okay, something is wrong. And then he moved his hand from my head to my stomach, and then he like pushed, and he's like praying aggressively. And I was like, okay, you know, and I'm waiting for, because something, you know, but like, I'm just also trying to be in the moment, and I'm, you know, waiting for the Holy Spirit, and I'm also, you know, focusing and praying. And then the thing happened, like, ngivele ngavukelwa idlozi, and I'd never experienced it before.
This is part two of a three-part series on why healers start churches. And in the last episode, we spent time with Carol Mutolo and her church, Lehae La Khanya, which is an apostolic church that she started partly as a continuation of the gift that she shares with her late grandfather. In this episode, we are going to look at a church that has a slightly different format, that is run by two healers who also happen to be mother and daughter. Ugogo Simenjalo and Gogo Zanemvula are both initiated sangomas, and they are also kobelas, meaning they run their own initiation school. They are also the co-founders of Afro Savvy, which in many ways is an institution of teaching and learning about almost everything around African spirituality. Online, AfroSavvy is, for me, one of the most insightful platforms with a rich offering of educational and informative content. They also host in-person events that delve deep into a wide range of topics that have to do with healing, the esoteric, all of which are centered around African modalities of healing. So we're going to spend some time with the both of them to try to understand what role Christianity, church, and the Bible play in their practice as healers and as teachers of African spirituality. And to do that, we are going to be attending one of their church services, which today happens to be taking place in a gated estate in a suburb in Joburg. I'm emphasizing the gated estate part, not to be spicy, but to highlight just how uniquely diverse these kinds of churches can be in terms of the communities that they serve. Most of the time, when you think of African-initiated churches, you probably picture ones that are happening in townships or rural areas. But today, sisema sabab scene.
Yes.
Right now, it is just after 5 p.m. on a Thursday afternoon. And today's service is being held in a house in the estates. And it forms part of a homecoming ceremony for one of Amathwasana, a young lady who is graduating from Gogo Simenjalo and Gogo Zanemvula school. So this is her family home. The ceremony starts with the slaughtering of a sheep, and the process is being guided by Ugogo Simenjalo. Being an educator, she is using this moment to teach people who have come not just about the ceremony, but how it must be conducted. This is also a continuation of the education of the young Gogo, who is being instructed on how to conduct the process herself.
Where's your knife? Thank you.
So what we need, she has a knife. The knife that is will be used to slaughter. That has to do with her work. So now you can get a bigger knife for slaughtering and keep it in the room.
And the ritual starts with the reading of the Bible.
Okay, we are reading from Exodus, the book of Exodus, the Passover lamb. So your lamb shall be without blemish, a male of the first year, and the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it. You shall bring it before the tent of meeting, which is this. Aaron and his sons shall lay their hands on the head of the bull, and you shall kill the bull before the Lord at the entrance of the tent of meeting. So what we do is we pray for it. Tinano Goko now. We pray before we pray.
Place your left hand on it.
So she's going to start with us, Mandla. So this is Mandla, we're going to go for Slomo Gelago. It will be a sweet aroma unto you.
With that part done, everyone is going to now change into their church regalia.
Go, go. Go and change. Go and change.
No, I'm as well.
Thank you. Let me eat before I change.
Knowing how loud church services can be, I'm curious to see how it's going to happen since we're in a gated community. Okay, so we've been told that the neighbors have been informed about the situation, but we still need to keep the noise levels a bit down. But there's a drum here, so good luck with that. The service starts with ukuphahla, which involves everyone in attendance, and then Gogo Simenjalo explains the purpose of the ceremony to the audience. The service is conducted in a kind of a condensed form of a normal church service, and of course there's the drum circle. One of the most interesting and beautiful parts of the service is the lighting of the candles. This part serves as the merging of the two worlds of ubungoma and Christianity. It is a symbolic bridging of these two worlds as complementary aspects of the same divine process of healing.
A whole community, if not your parents, you have Baba, you have Abopoti, you have Abobafo, you have your family and friends also who are there to accompany you. They are
throughout the service, different people who know Ukoko give words of encouragement and congratulations on her graduation. And everything is done through Bible verses and through song before a short sermon concludes the day.
Baba nkulunkulu wami ama angels nkulunkulu wami ingelozi nkulunkulu wami izalela ikhaya bese wena uhamba ngaphambili usinikeza ukuhlakanipha nokwazi ukuba siwenze nkulunkulu wami lo msebenzi baba nkulunkulu wami hayi ngokuhlakanipha kwethu kodwa nkulunkulu wami ngendlela baba esizoboniswa ngakhona baba ngicela konke ngokuthemba igama lakhe linamandla manje kuze kube ngunaphakade amen.
So it's around 10 p.m. and the service has just broken for supper. There's going to be another ceremony that is going to be held, but that is a private ceremony for the family. And next week I'll be sitting down with Ukoko Simenjalo and Ukoko Zanemvula to have a conversation about them and their relationship with Ubungoma and Christianity and the Bible. Justify, 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 justify. So I started speaking first to Ugogo Semenjalo. I was asking her about her personal history in terms of spirituality and her relationship with the church. And later on, we were joined by her daughter, Ugogo Zanemvula.
That would make me want to close that shell forever. But that has just, it's just what happened. What I remember clearly would be my great-grandmother, because that's one person that I found I would spend a lot of time with during school holidays. And I didn't like the rurals, but mm-hmm. I liked spending time with my grandmother. Mm-hmm. So that was my biggest challenge, that to spend time with my great-grandmother, I would need to go to the rural area that I actually didn't like. I found that I preferred to be in town where my parents lived, or where home was mm-hmm. in that time. And for me, I found that even when I was at home, my spirit longed for my grandmother. And I learned now that what I liked about being with my great-grandmother was the fact that it would be just me and her. Where as opposed to at home, my mom and my many siblings and the other people that we actually lived with, who were also our siblings in the African culture.
What form of spirituality played a part in your memory?
A big part of it with my mom and my maternal grandmother was Christianity.
Okay.
And with my great grandmother, it was the exact opposite. She didn't have any experience of church. She was a part of the royal family in the Sobhuza second, Eswatini. So, she did not have any experience of church, and her spirituality was really just based on Sintu. Mm. And whereas with my mom and my maternal grandmother, they were Christian. My mom was a very young Christian, looking at it. She was a young Christian, but she's been very consistent with her Christianity over the years. And I guess that foundation was laid also by her mom, who was Anglican. Yes, all of my maternal grandmother's family was Anglican. And they were Anglican, and all of them were nurses also. So it was four girls who were Anglican and nurses. And on my paternal side, I think that is why maybe my father did not have any kind of affiliation to any church.
Mm-hmm.
It's because his great-grandmother was this person. His grandfather was Inyanga yasebukhosini eSwatini. So this is Madlozi. So my father and my mom had very opposing views on spirituality. But it became a problem. The problem was that my mom was such a Bible-bashing Christian, in that she believed everything should be done by the book, and the book being the Bible. And there's a lot of things in the Bible a lot of teachings in the Bible that demonize African spirituality. Mm. So that was their biggest challenge as well in their marriage.
What did that do to you? Like, what did you feel you were most connected with?
I was actually connected to both.
Okay.
To both, because I enjoyed all of my time at church with my mom and with my grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
Church became a place where I was also a sponge for mm-hmm. knowledge, for learning,
mm-hmm.
for information. So I did not just go to church on Sundays. I went to Bible study with my mother and my grandmother. I went to Bible club on Tuesdays with the children in the neighborhood. I went to an Anglican school,
mm-hmm.
which meant that we had morning assembly every day, which was prayer and the word. On Thursdays, we would have a midday service at the parish. So my life was just about church. And that was the difference with visiting my great-grandmother. So all of my life in town was about church. My friends were church people. School was church. Sunday school, I left out Sunday school because we'd go to Sunday school before church itself.
Yes.
Yeah. So that was my life this side in town. But when I would go visit my great-grandmother, there was none of that. Mm. I would even forget that there's a Sunday, that today is a Sunday, because this is how Sunday is marked by going to church. Yes, you know. So that was the beauty of it. And with her, I learned so many different things. She believed... Maskulumang is seen to, we also bring it back to the relationship of umuntu and spirituality. You know, and that was my great-grandmother. She is the person that taught me about rain and revering rain, being able to understand and also revere just the sky instead of looking at the sky as heaven, because in the Christian sense, yes, the sky represents, we look up to the sky when we are talking about heaven, and that's actually not even it, you know. She's the one that taught me about plants and their medicinal values. That was my great grandmother. She was very scared of lightning and thunder. Storms they represented something totally different for her, which at my home was normal. It was just a normal, it would be just rain and a storm, but for her it represented something totally different. But she also taught me things that, okay, like how I learned to understand what Nhlengethwa is, because that is my surname.
Yeah.
And how we relate to dolphins, and how that is Nhlengethwa.
Oh, dolphin.
A dolphin is Nhlengethwa. Okay. Yeah. And how we connect to those and what that actually means. And it's education that I would not have gotten from anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the things that I found, that spending time with my great-grandmother, I was learning things that maybe even my father didn't know.
Mm.
So now I would speak all of these things, and my father would appreciate it. My mom would think that it was weird. I learned that, you know, the walking stick from my grandmother, I would learn that walking stick is not just any
wood. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not just picked up randomly that this is going to be my walking stick. She had a thing with storms and lightning specifically. So her walking stick was a stick that was, that would prevent that from actually striking her.
Mm-hmm.
And she would place it very strategically in her roundhouse each time we had a storm. I just learned the opposing lifestyles or religions or spirituality, because I also, I'm just going to say that when we speak about religion, we speak about a whole lot of ideas that try to explain our relationship with God, you know, and how we get to conduct ourselves with each other. So a lot of religion is also based on moral standards.
Yes.
And when it comes to spirituality, it's a totally different story. In spirituality, we understand that there's light and dark.
Mm.
We understand that all of those have a place in life and in each one of us, and that each one of us is made up in that way. In Christianity, we're supposed to throw out the one and keep the one.
Yeah,
and that is the biggest struggle of the life of Christians, because then they get judged using the same yardstick that they use for everybody else, but nobody can live up to it.
Mm.
And that is that is what I found to be a challenge. So when we sit and we look at Christianity as it stands, we actually do understand, we can see that no one would get to the heaven that they so dream of.
When you were growing up balancing this Christian view and this African spiritual view of the world, when it became apparent that you have a gift, did it cause any kind of conflict between these two worlds that you were straddling?
It did. Okay, first of all, I did not... Having a gift, even just thinking that it is a gift, it didn't look like a gift. It didn't seem like a gift. It felt like a burden.
Really?
It felt like a burden because it spoke to... making peace with everything else that I'd learned from the Christian lens, which was more dominant, because we tend to take after the parents that we spend a lot of time with, or the most time with. And for me, that was my mom.
Okay.
You know? So, and that was also because I had spent more time also in the Christian space, you know, Sunday school, like I said, Bible club, Bible school, all of those. So I spent a lot more time in a Christian space than I did in with my great grandmother, because that was the source of all the lessons that I was learning. She was, and then she passed on. You know, and she passed on, and I was very young. I think I was 9 when she passed on. So that was the end of my education.
Okay.
And then I was just now being educated by the Christians.
Sure. Is then the reason why it felt like a burden that it was fighting with the Christian side of things?
Yes. Okay. When I went to Epetlweni for initiation, I struggled with what is termed sithunywa. Mm-hmm. Because in that space they speak of sithunywa, they speak of Christianity more than anything. You know, this is how it was actually translated.
And how did they define it then?
It was about how our great grandparents or grandparents found themselves in the church because African spirituality was demonized.
Yes.
So a lot of them were hiding in the church.
Okay.
You know, and because of that, now it was then all of it was about the Bible. It was just basically a Christian exercise within the African spirituality.
This question of Isithunywa has always fascinated me. Based on what you're saying, does it mean that Isithunywa was a thing that came about because of that dynamic of Black people needing refuge, and that process gave birth to a particular kind of spiritual entity? Or was it something else? Has it always existed over time, and then it sort of had to change form, as it were, to become Isithunywa?
This is, I'm going to say it's how it was interpreted in the space in which I was initiating.
Mm-hmm.
That is how it was spoken of. And that is what I had a problem with. So, and I had a problem also with just the Bible, using the Bible for Isithunywa. It was just about the Bible. We are reading scripture in that week. It was going to church every morning, and this is what is being done. Xenigia Tanda as well, suddenly we have a whole service. And that is what my issue was, is I didn't have an issue with God. Mm-hmm. But I had an issue with the African God. With the Christian God in that time. I had an issue with, because also I was just waking up to African spirituality. I was also in a space where, you know how when we were growing, we were also very radical. And now it was not about the white person that actually colonized us. Mm. It was now the Christianity was an extension of that colonization.
Yeah.
So that is why I totally just rejected it in that time. And also my mom was a Christian, and my Christian family found that they were not able to support me through my Petlo journey because of their beliefs. And for me, it was if family can stand back and let you be because of Christianity, then I suddenly had a problem with Christianity. It presented a big problem for me. So that was a big thing. But in terms of the Isithunywa spirit being Christian, or having come about because we needed to find a place or a space to practice African spirituality, I do not actually believe that. My standpoint is just coming to the word Isithunywa. We can translate it in many ways. it is the sent, or those who are sent, you know. And we are not just sent by the Christian God, or especially us, we were not, because Christianity was not originally ours. But even then, we had people that were sent, you know, and or which we believe, which were sent to guide, which were sent to lead people in spirituality. But if we look at it also, when we look at it with the understanding that spirituality is a big part of who we are, is a big part of the experience of why we are actually here. Spirituality, if we look at it, is that part of us which is spirit that has always existed, that existed before we had the body and the mind, and so that means it's always been there. And the fact that everybody, every human being is a spirit having a human experience, then you can understand that every one of us then have been sent, have that spirit of Sithunya, because we're here because we've been sent. It speaks to the scripture, if we're going to go to that, who can I send? And somebody would want, everybody Tumamina. Has been sent. Yes, Tumamina, that's basically what it is. Yes. And that is what Sithunya is. We're all sent here to do something or to accomplish something. Mm. There's the one thing that could not be done in the ecosystem if you are not doing it. You know, it's in the same way that there's so many podcasts, but this one would not be done if we're not doing it. And it won't be done in the way that you do it. And you're not going to get to the people that you actually get to. So you're not going to, no one is going to extract those lessons that need to be extracted if you're not doing this work. So you have Sithunya, one. Two, also Uthunyiwe, so kwawena uSithunya. That is my belief. And for my belief is that now we need to then find that thing with each person. Each person needs to find that, what have I been sent here to do? It is attached to each person's purpose, and how each person also carries God within. We carry God with us. As long as we have spirit in us, then we all carry God with us or in us, which then translates us to us being co-creators with the creator, right? Mm-hmm. And because God has no, I'm using God, the term God, lightly, loosely, because it is, we all translate it to a higher being or divinity. And all of us were created by the same source, mm-hmm. or by the same creator. And that same creator puts the same thing in all of us. And well, how we differ is just maybe by skin color, hair, and wah, wah, wah. But we all essentially are the same person, you know. So we all essentially have loyo moya, or that spirit within us. That spirit, that is the spirit that was put in us, is what was sent to do, to experience this realm that we're in. Mm-hmm. That is what was sent. So nasoge leso Sithunya. The Sithunya lives within us. The Sithunya is the spirit that is actually within us. And if we take the time and the commitment and the discipline to actually activate that spirit, because what happens is that over time we become very, we are more in touch with our humanity, mm-hmm. because that is what the world feeds, you know, and our spirit kind of takes a backseat. And that when we were talking earlier about dreams, and that is when now when the body rests, that is when only time when spirit gets to creep in, mm-hmm. because there's no distractions. But that is where we now look at why we want to look at the dreams.
Okay.
Because that is the language of spirit.
Yes.
Or that is when we think spirit is able to speak and
yeah.
translate, and is also able to dominate,
mm-hmm.
because now the body has taken a backseat at that time, mm-hmm. of sleep. And that is my belief of Christianity, of that is my belief about Sithunya. My when we speak of where we are coming from in terms of emaphehlo and bungoma and Christianity, a lot of the time we come out of that space with the ideas that our babas will have about a certain thing.
And would have instilled in you,
yes,
during
or
that
would
time.
Have tried to instill in you during that time. Because also during that time, emaphehlo is so short, And it's a pity that we...
But it feels like a lifetime, I'm sure, to the people yeah. in.
And it's also a pity that when we are in that space, we think when we come out, we are... Come in, Mama.
Hello.
How are you?
Thank you. Nice to see you. Why? You need a microphone.
No, for real?
Yes. Because when we're talking about the things that are instilled in you as you're growing up. So I want to get your background, your spiritual background. What kind of a spiritual home, or rather, how did spirituality play a role in your upbringing, if you can remember?
That's a very interesting question. And the way that you've put it also is, it brings up things that I'd never even considered or thought about. I never thought about the spirituality of my upbringing. My mom was very Christianized growing up, when I was growing up. So we did church, and as I got older as well, her calling seemed to intensify, but she also, the expression of it went deeper and deeper into church. So we became more and more involved in the church. So now it wasn't just church on Sundays. Now it's church on Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays. Now she's also getting her own, like, she's becoming a pastor or a preacher also in her own right. She's like part of the church council. So she was very, very, there was a constant deep search for spirit, and the only outlet that we knew of was church. We didn't even, the whole topic of Ubungoma never even crossed our minds. For the longest time, I didn't even know what a Sangoma was. I didn't know what it was. So
before we go past that point, how did her being heavily Christianized shape your view of Christianity? Because I'm sure sometimes the issue would be that if your parent is too into Christianity, it can create that spiritual trauma of having that parent who is too hectic and too tough on it. How did that her Christianity affect you as a child?
And I've seen that a lot, you know, Bo PK, pastor's kids, yes, and how they can go like so aggressively in the opposite direction. And that never really happened with me. I think it if anything, I enjoyed the gospel music so much. My connection to my mother's spirituality, I feel like, was very much in the music. So I loved a lot of the gospel music that she chose to play. I loved it. And
really?
And so my connection to Christianity was strongest through the music. The music is what drove my spirituality in religion. But then she also, outside of the whole church Christian space, she was very, very into like Erykah Badu, Lauryn Hill, like very woke musical artists that were very into, they were very much very spiritually aware, very black conscious, very, you know, and they spoke about things that, especially like the Erykahs, you know, that neo soul vibe, where they would speak about things that are quite taboo, like the ankh. So it would spark a bit of a curiosity, but it never really, I never mentally went there. There was just this thing that was always there, like this influence that was always there subconsciously. And so when there was, we had an event in, I guess it was an event in my mom's life, but because, you know, as her daughter, it's like a ripple effect when it happens to her, it kind of happens to me, where we were then kind of pulled away from the church space. And that abrupt pulling away from the church space, and then you know, we lost my sister, and that was also very, that also left a kind of like a questions, unanswered questions.
Was it a pulling from church into Ubungoma, or was it just a leaving of the church?
Just a leaving of the church. Okay. There was no Ubungoma yet. Okay. There was a gap of nothingness. You know, from the leaving church, there was just a gap of maybe a year or two of just like radio silence, if I could say. And that then, you know, then we traveled to the UK and we were kind of still healing from the grief of losing my sister, and we were kind of just adjusting to a different kind of lifestyle in a different country. And then what I know for myself is that what brought me eventually into African spirituality was a homesickness, right? Because I was so far away from home. My family moved back, but I stayed in the UK by myself. And you know, around 2 years of living by myself that side, I started to have a very deep homesickness that I didn't understand the depths of that homesickness until, you know, I started, because it felt like, oh, I miss the food, I miss this, I miss that, and the weather and whatever. But the homesickness did this thing where it led me on a path of soul searching, like actually like who am I, you know. It was more
and
than
happening that side.
Yes, it was happening that side. Yeah. I was away from home, I was surrounded by Abelungu in Abelungu land, so it was really quite interesting. And I was in a unique position, I felt, because as I'm, you know, my mom was also going through, that's when she started to also go through her thing of now her calling is also kind of erupting. Her calling to Ubungoma is erupting. She's having her sicknesses and she's now having to find what we would call alternative help. And where I was, she wasn't really telling me too much of the things that were happening because she didn't want me to worry. But I was also going through, like, having my own strange dreams and, you know, learning different ways to connect with spirit. You know, I would get like a sage wand, I had crystals, so it was very new agey what I was going through. But then I was in an interesting position because I was in university, and the universities in the United Kingdom have library archives that they stole from Africa.
I was gonna say, of all the stolen stuff,
exactly,
that we are needing right now,
exactly. And that was fascinating to me, that like there were all these books that I know we didn't have at home when I was there. I was like, this is so crazy. So I would then, you know, time that I was now supposed to be spending actually reading like my course material, I would get lost in like these ancient spiritual texts. And that's where I was kind of like exposed to interesting things that had never crossed my mind.
It makes me think of that whole concept of spiritual wilderness that seemingly you all have to go through, that you found yourself in this place where you have to search, but you have no one to lean on and no one to reassure you that this is the right path or you're doing the right thing. You just have to go as it pushes you.
Yeah, it really felt like that. It was interesting as well, but, you know, I didn't really have like someone to ask about like my dreams. Would say, okay, I dreamt of this, what does this mean? I still didn't understand Ubungoma. It was still a complete mystery to me. So, and I wasn't immediately likening it to that, but then, you know, there was something that was happening. And then I was also remembering the music. That's when I was remembering like Buthandiswa Mazwai and Simpiwe Dana, and like just random, like home, like earthy, homely music. So I was immersed in the texts, in the music. And by the time I got back, my like it's like I'd been cooking or something. I just felt ready and I didn't know what I was ready for.
You know, you just reminded me of something when you're speaking of Othandiswa and Simphiwe Dan. And I remember the first time us as a country heard Simphiwe Dan. I remember the day so clearly. It was on Izo Izo. There was a poetry session. And this lady stood up. I think she had a hat that sort of covered her eyes or something. And I think it was near the end of the episode. And I think she sang Direk. And I remember everybody just lost them. Like, what the hell is that? And I think it was one of the first times for us as a generation, we heard a song that hit where no other... Because Simphiwe Dan and Thandiswa, they're ours, you know. They're like our people. Like, there was the first time where we were introduced as a generation for ourselves into that kind of, you know, spiritually charged music. And I think it's also a big blessing that they're still around, especially the two of them. But now, at some point, you also became a healer. And your initiation, Ipehlo, did it also include Christianity? Did it also include that aspect of Isithunywa and the Bible and the church services and all of those things?
I just wanted to come in there when you were speaking about Thandiswa and Simphiwe. And I just want to point out how, just take it back to our conversation in Isithunywa, and you can clearly see what it is that they were sent here to do for us as a people. And but that comes, it dates back to also 1993, 94, 95 when Kwaito was actually coming, became a thing, because that was also very spiritual. That was a spiritual time. That is when you could see a people become now playing music that speaks to them, that speaks to their spirit. Because spirit is not just about being meek and humble, and its spirit is what happens with what you feel, what music does to you when it sits, when what song will do, what music will do, what the drum will do, whatever it is that you are listening to that wakes up, that awakens your spirit. And that Kwaito time actually was an awakener of our African spirit, our very specific brand of African spirit, because our brand of African spirituality is not the same as that you will find in Nigeria, for instance. So I just wanted to bring that in, that yes, with Thandiswa and Simphiwe doing a different kind of thing, and that is the thing where we are going to point out a certain kind of genre as being spiritual, I want to say all of them when we're speaking about music. It is either light or dark, but there's also all the grays in between, you know. But all of it is just actually an expression of spirit. It's an expression of Isithunywa. It's an expression of self as well. Thank you.
So now you are immersed in this whole library, physical, metaphysical library of African spiritual, African historical fragments and all of those things. And now you are going through the process of becoming a Sangwa. Doesn't that now create a clash between the Christian side? Because my assumption would be that process, you spoke about being radicalized. Did that process of learning more about African spirituality radicalize you against Christianity?
100%. And I think there's a phase that I like to believe that maybe all people go through it when they are now, because when you transition, for lack of a better term, into a spirituality, out of religion into spirituality, there is this like a resentment and an anger and a more resentment more than anything towards religion, where you kind of feel like I've been living a lie, I've wasted all my time, I've been putting so much of my heart and my soul into this thing that is now I just feel like I've been living a lie. So there was definitely that anger was there. I think because there was so much to learn I was so immersed in the learning, and then I very quickly also ended up in a space where I'm like trying to explain things to people so much that now I'm talking a lot, and I had to try to not speak hatefully about Christianity, because, you know, I was so angry, and I just felt like we all need to, like, you know, when you kind of wake up, quote unquote,
you want to burn it all down.
Yes, exactly. And you want everyone to wake up, and you just want us, like, you want to slap people awake, yeah. You know, but it's like I had to eventually learn that that was my journey, and everybody has their journey. And
how did you reconcile?
I don't know about if I you know, and there was a question that you asked about, like, when I was then epeshweni, did I go through the whole Estunia thing where there's the Bible and it's, you know, very much, it's very kind of churchy. Mm. I struggled with that part of my epeshlo. And, you know, it was interesting because I was with other people. I was going through that process with other people, and my mom was our kobela, and she was really good at it. Like, so good at it that she's great at teaching it, great at expressing her spirituality in that way. And I just kind of, you know, for myself, I kind of just, you know, I would tell myself that she'd been in it for a lot longer than I had been. And maybe I haven't cooked as many years in the pot. You know,
pot.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because also my Christianity was very, even when I was a Christian, I was very imaginative, even in that, like, I just wanted to write films about, like, guardian angels. I loved all the movies, Bo Legion and all these movies about heaven and hell. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was very, like, creative and spiritual about that as well, and even it would affect my dreams. Even my dreams were very, like, heaven and hell. It was very spiritual, like, very etheric. Yeah,
it had a strong Christian theme.
Yes. That's, but so it was very not like, oh, you know, Jesus and the Old Testament and the New Testament and the things that happen. It was very much like, what is happening in the other realms, mm-hmm, of this Christian thing that we are doing? Mm-hmm. Like, what's happening in the realms when we're here and we're praying, when we'd be in church and we'd all be praying and everyone is praying and it's so loud with prayer. I would open my eyes because in my mind, I'm trying to imagine all of the angels that are filling the room and the wings and the, you know, I was always like, very much curious about what's happening in the other realms, so much so that sometimes I would actually think I see things, but I would think I see ghosts and things, yeah, like that. And then, you know, a lot of the things when I then started my journey ebungomeni, I understood some of the things that happened to me in my Christian life, because then there was also points where they were trying to, like, exercise me of demons in the church because, really? Yeah. So that was, you know, that was also kind of scary because it's like, okay, do I have demons?
How did that happen? Because my assumption would have been that because your mom, we have a Tasa before you, right?
Mm.
So how did you end up in a church that didn't understand Igos?
Yeah, so she Tasa'd before me, but this was now much later in life, after we had lost my sister, we'd moved to the UK, we came back, well, she came back, and then I was still that side and she twice that. But before we were removed from the church space, in the last church that we were a part of, before we became removed from the church space, there was Wednesday prayer services that we would go to. Mm-hmm. In the church had another church in the mountains, sort of. It was like an hour drive from home. And so on Wednesday, we would go, they would call them prophetic services. Was it Friday? Wednesday, I think, was Bible study. Friday was the prophetic services. Then Sunday was normal church. I think it was Friday when it was like the prophetic service. Mm-hmm. So it's just all day you're there. It's packed. Like, people are flowing out the building. It's so full. And he would prophesy, the Mfundisi, he would prophesy. And he was very talented at that. And he would do the thing. Now when I look back at it, Begane, he was doing also, he was merging his whatever Christianity show that he was doing, but he was very much channeling Amadlozi. but that's fine. We, you know, that's another story for another day. But he was doing his thing and he was amazing at it. And then he would call people up like my number plate or my cell phone number or my house number and things like that. It was, you know, and then they'd come up and he'd prophesy. And then at one of those services, he asked children that are writing exams or anyone that's writing exams, let me pray for you. So there were about six of us and we went up. And he started with the first one. And he would do this thing where he lays a hand on your forehead and you fall, right? Everybody like would fall because they'd be like, I guess, overcome with the Holy Spirit. Mm. So I didn't know what that felt like. So I was kind of excited. I was like, oh, this is going to be my first time like feeling the Holy Spirit, you know? I was so excited.
That's an odd thing to be excited about.
Because I'd never like felt it before. And I was always like, wow, like everyone is always, you know? I was the third in the row, and first person fell, second person fell, amazing. And then when he walked up in front of me, I remember it like it was yesterday. His eyes to me that day, I'd never seen his eyes look the way that they looked. And he looked at me, and there was an immediate discomfort when he looked at me. And I felt like, okay, you know, maybe he's gonna like pray like extra hard for me. Maybe there's something that he's like, I don't know. But he kind of hesitated when he got to me. And then he put his hand on my forehead and he did the thing. And I was like waiting for my knees to get weak and whatever, but it didn't happen. That's when I was like, okay, something is wrong. And then he moved his hand from my head to my stomach. And then he like pushed and he's like, pray aggressively. And I was like, okay, you know, and I'm waiting for it because something, you know, but like, I'm just also trying to be in the moment and I'm, you know, waiting for the Holy Spirit. And I'm also, you know, focusing and praying. And then the thing happened, like, and I'd never experienced it before. It felt like a fire. It felt like an explosion from inside. Like there was just an explosion and I was just screaming, right? But it wasn't like high-pitched screaming. It was just like loud, aggressive noise. And I was also, I could tell the waterworks. My eyes were just pouring with water. Sure. And that went on for a while, I was told. I was in and out of it. There was a lot going on. I was overwhelmed. So I was kind of confused. I felt like I was in and out of it. But I was told that it went on for a while. Even the other people that had been in the row to get prayed for had kind of stood back and they sat down eventually just kind of waiting for this thing to be over because now everyone is screaming, fire, fire. They're pouring me with water and they're casting out these demons and they're asking, demanding the demons to tell them, who are you? What is your name? You know, because they want to, the demons must always say their name so that they can cast them out by name. And I just remember I kept hearing in Jesus' name. And like, it was crazy. And even after that, when that whole thing kind of subsided, I knew that nothing left me. Whatever it was kind of just calmed down. And then I was worried for a while that like I have like demons that are like not leaving me because that's all I know is like heaven and hell and God and the devil. And whatever that was can't be good because I don't know it, mm-hmm. Right? And over time, I kind of just forgot about it and I moved on with my life. And then when I, just before ngingene phehlweni, like twice before I entered Pehlo. And when it happened in this time when I have more exposure to, you know, Madlozi and Bungoma, I remember the first time then Mang Vusilozi. I remember it was like, oh, this is that thing that happened to me then in church, you know? Like that's what that was. And I kind of was able to heal and make peace with that thing that had happened and not feel like, you know, in the back of my mind, like, you know, there's some kind of like demonic something.
I'm drowning in fire. even if it's just inside my head. I wanna expire and do all the things I said.
So it settled the debate around demons and egos, and in that you understood what that thing was, and that there was no conflict.
Really. Yeah. And it also helped me to learn, because then I also had to learn about the difference, because even in the Dlozi space, there's the, you know, for lack of a better term, the good and the bad, right? Mm. There's the Dlozi that you want to engage with, and then there's the Dlozi that you want to geza and lahla and things like that. So, you know, I was able to understand some of those things as well.
Mm.
But yeah, it was quite a journey. I think there's a lot of, in terms of Christianity, I feel like it just doesn't fully cater to who we are.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things about gifts that we already have that can be expressed in that space, like he was doing, like that prophet was doing. Yeah. It's just, if he were to say that, you know, this is what I'm doing, he would be ostracized and told that he's demonic. But it's like, these are gifts that we already have, you know? And I feel like that's the kind of the bridge that we need to, or the gap that we need to bridge between what we've, the traditional Christianity that as we know it, and our spirituality as African people.
Are there such things as demons?
I think it's now becomes about terminology and language.
Mm-hmm.
In Ngesintu, we don't have the term demons, like ama demoni, as we don't know, that's an English word, right? But we do have like dipogi and like imimoya lemdaka and like snyama and things like that, gunetilwane, things that need to be cleansed and gotten rid of, you know. So demons, I guess, linguistically, I think that's where I pause. Let's say, okay, what are we saying? What are we talking about when we say that? Because a demon in English and in Christianity is like children of the devil. We don't have the devil either. We don't have usatan.
Yes, the terminologies are totally different. So now, so Twasile, you are done now. What does the Christian aspect of spirituality, what role does it play in your practice?
You know, this is the part of ukuthwasisa especially that I really appreciate having my mom around, and I need to work on it for myself so that I don't rely on her so much for that part of it. Because when I have like clients and initiates that are also very heavily gifted in this thing of prayer, I don't feel equipped to guide them in that.
Really?
My guidance is always very nature-based, and so I speak of prayer as the air element and the spoken word. So I always my teachings are always based on the elements and on the cycles of nature. And that's how I work and that's how I teach. So when you are going to practice, everything is rooted in the elements. Even when we are maslahluba, masi, when we are treating people, when whatever healing work we're doing, we're rooting it in the elements, and I make sense of it through the elements. And so when we're dealing with spoken word, that is the air element. And that's a very important part of the work as well, is your spoken word. What are you putting, like, what are you emitting, right? In that sense. So prayer, it can be an incantation, a chant, a whatever it is that, you know, you are evoking with your words. And so that's as far as I can take you. I can't teach you what to say in your own spiritual practice, you know? So there's the Lord's Prayer, you know, there's, you're gonna do your own research as to what it is that works for you. You can listen to me pahla, and then you can use that as guidance for yourself when you pahla, because that's how I also learned to pahla, through my kobela and my kobela's kobela and all of that. But you're not going to learn from me how to pray.
Okay.
It's just not gonna happen. I do try, but I don't pray like out loud.
Yeah.
Prayer is still a very awkward thing for me.
Yeah.
I'm in a very awkward space with it. I still like, when I know I have to pray, I take a moment, and that's like minimum 10 minutes just to get into like the mindset of like, okay, you know, uNkulunkulu mdali, somandla, you know, I had to first come back to the Sintu way of like, how do I evoke the spirit of the creator? Okay, cool. There's that. And then what am I also don't like to do the thing of asking. So I will thank, and then I will ask. And then there's the thing that like, I've seen people when they pray, they can pray for long. Mm. My prayer is very direct. I know what I want. I know what I'm here to say.
Yeah.
I say it and then I'm done. And that feels awkward in a setting where we're doing like a group spiritual thing. Yeah. Cause it's like, oh,
is that so it? Good. So now, do you guys have what could be considered regular church service?
We used
as elders, as spiritual elders, do you do that? Like,
Are you talking me and my mom, my Kobela specifically, or like in general as a bangoma?
No, as in the two of you.
Okay, so we used to do that very often. The only reason we don't do it as often is because we're just not giving ourselves as much. We're trying to replenish and refill our own cups.
Do you feel that you were giving too much?
Yes. It was.
How was that period like? What was happening?
My mom was twasising a lot. And then I started to twasis as well. So then the house was always just full of people that needed us. So from the minute you wake up in the morning, you don't even, before you even wake up at 3 a.m., you're always hearing go, 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 go. Banfu bashaya ipulhu outside. You can hear it from the bedrooms. And they're walking up and down. They have to shower. They have to go pasha. It's beautiful. It smells like pepo, lovely. But already there's that, okay, where from the minute, like before the sun even rises, we're already made aware, okay, there's people. When we wake up in the morning, people are already with their dreams. They want to tell you about the dreams that they had. You have to apply yourself from the minute you open your eyes in the morning. You have to apply yourself to people's dreams. Maybe they didn't sleep well. Maybe they're not feeling well. Maybe. So people are in your care. You are responsible for them while they're here, for however many months that they're here. And we have to drum for them in the morning. We have to drum for them in Tambama. They all have to vusamadlozi. And we have to monitor the situation and see how we can help them improve and be on alert the whole time.
Yeah.
And that's, so it never switches off.
And that involved holding church.
Yes.
What was the purpose of the service and how was it conducted?
Okay, so my mom and I did things differently, right? She liked to do 8 a.m. services or 7, was it 7 a.m.? 7 or 8 a.m. services for 7 days straight, because we would usually start with this tunya thing. So if your process is 6 months or if it's 3 months, the first 7 days of your petrol process is going to be tunya. It's essentially 14 days, but the first 7 days is the most intense. We take you to the river twice a day. We bucket you with water. We go to the springs and the waterfalls and all of these different sites, caves, mountains, for you to pasha and connect with all of these different sources of nature, of what we call like energy sources. Mm-hmm. And then at 8 a.m. every morning, she would do prayer services. So everyone would get a chance to lead a prayer service. And this is to train you to be that person at home that people can, you can spiritually lead at home. Okay. So if there's anything going on at home, if there's a funeral or whatever, so that needs to
you're
happen.
Training a in that context, you're training a person to be a spiritual leader. I almost want to say vocally, someone who can speak for spirit, but also being black Christianized people that leans towards Christians.
Yes.
That leans towards Christianity.
Yes,
okay.
Yes,
I didn't know that's a kind of teaching.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's kind of like just to also, because you know, when you leave home, there must be a difference. When you get back home, they must see that this is a person that actually went and they learned something.
Yeah.
And they're able to, they are an elder spiritually. you know, you can lead them in prayer, you can lead whatever's going on, you need to be able to be on par with like abantu abadala ekhaya spiritually.
So you need to be confident in your own voice.
Yes, so yes.
You give that training.
100%. So if we see that you are lacking in some sense, you're uncomfortable, you're still insecure, we push you to do the thing until you're kind of comfortable with it and you're able to do it, because you also need to be able to facilitate that gateway between the physical realm and the spiritual realm at home.
Mm.
So you also should be able to pasha for people at home, magnum sebenzi. So it's that kind of thing. And that's like 7 to 14 days of that training. So with my twas, as with my initiates, so she would do that and she would be there and she would be like fully in the thing. Also, you know, what I would do is I would be in a separate room. Really? I would tell them, yeah, with my kids, I would tell them that you have, and I wouldn't do 8 a.m. So I would do 5 a.m. That at 5 a.m., and I'm not even like an early riser like my mom, but I would be, and it's interesting, we're in the space, I would be, for that 7 days, I'd be sleeping here because they're in here. Mm-hmm. So I would want to be woken up by the sound of their singing, and I tell them that if I don't wake up, that means you were not singing enough. I want to hear all of the church songs that you know, like, and I must be jamming from my waking up. I must feel like, yes, you know, the spirit is alive and awake. So they'd be doing the thing, and then I would assign them each day, you are going to lead the prayer service this day, you're going to lead the service, and they have the order of service. I'd give it to them, and I would be there for the first one, and then I would make corrections at the end of it. And then the next few ones, I would go to them only afterwards, and I'd ask the others for feedback. How did she do? What did you learn from that service? And all of that. So I wasn't in it, but I would monitor it from a distance. And it's, I think it's also just because of my own relationship with it, you know.
Still in conflict.
I still am. It's just, it doesn't resonate with my spiritual expression. I think that's all it is. I have no problems with it. So maybe conflict is even a strong word. I have no kinds of issues with it. When people are doing it, I love it for them. Yeah, I love it for people when they're doing it. There's a strong lack of resonance for me.
So now, that ceremony that we were at, what was that ceremony? What is it called, and what is its purpose?
Okay. So, with our kind of church, what has happened with church for us, or for me specifically, is that I've drifted away from your typical church in the same way that, which is informed by also my lack of resonance when it was happening in my bandla, the bandla that I was trained at, where I went to initiate. And my struggle with that time, when it was time for Gwenda's Tunya, which is how it was put, I struggled with it. I had issues with my baba, especially the first time that I had issues with her, in that I didn't want to participate in the way that it was being done, in the way that it was Christianized, in the way that it was explained. It did not resonate with me at all, because I also now had issues with Christianity. I felt that it had stolen a big part of my life, and in the same way that the colonialists already stole our lives. So I felt that it was more of that stealing, and I'd given so much of my life to it, because I'd come up with it from my grandmother, my mom Kulu, and so my life had been about church. My schooling was also centered around church, because I went to Anglican schools all of my life. So I also felt a type of way about Christianity during that time, because I felt that if had it not been for Christianity, my part of the learnings or the lessons on African spirituality would have been more real. They would not have just disappeared with also my great-grandmother going. Mm-hmm. So, and also in the way that my father practiced, my father was okay with talking to the boys about those kind of things, about African spirituality, which was a part of his life because of his grandfather and his father. And they were not, but he was not comfortable with us girls. Maybe because we were going to get married and go off somewhere, or maybe also because of our relationship with our mom. And maybe it was seen as a woman thing. Mm. So we just went to church with mama. So that is what it was for me. So when we were now in that space, I just felt that in that space, we would say now it's Tunywa time. This is how we're relating to is Tunywa. I had difficulty there. But from then, okay, I did what I needed to do because I was in her space and she was also my teacher. So there was a reason why I was sent to that space. And I learned there that you actually learn what you can and you actually move on. That you're not going to get everything from the same space. And that is why I practice also in the way that I practice, that people should be able to, they're open to, they should get what they get from me and go get what they need to get from the rest of their journeys. That is how it is, you know. And so for me, that was the challenge. But within the bandla, after Kuthwasa and going through my own initiation and my own journey, the beginning of it was staying in the space in where I was initiated. That is how you learn. Oh, that is how I learned, and that is how I saw that my growth. I still needed to be held because you don't twasa and then just think that you now know all of it. So I still needed to be held. My journey with them had not come to an end because now I had initiated. There's still things that I still needed to learn. So within their church and the way in which they practiced their Christianity or their Stunyuan-ness, these things that I found actually resonated with me, specifically in the way that the relationship between African spirituality and the Old Testament in the Bible. Okay. I found that stayed with me because also I had studied very deeply the Old Testament with my grandmother. And so I understood the covenant of the Ark. I understood a whole lot of Christianity and the rituals. The
Old Testament is very ritualistic.
Yes. And the Exodus, Leviticus. Yeah. And I was very, even the calling, because the Bible is about the minor prophets and the major prophets. And so it covers the calling and the nature of a calling. And if we go through that Old Testament, we're actually able to see how each person fits in, or how each person's spirituality would fit into that religious setting. Mm-hmm. So in the Old Testament, a lot of things were actually taken mm-hmm. into account. And that is the part that I found that I resonated with. Okay. And I found that I use it also as a manual also to build on what Omoya places on me for rituals.
Okay.
So I use that as a basis.
Okay.
Instead of taking from all kinds of people, because I do have a belief that whoever, that the spirit in that book, in the Bible, in the way that it stands, there may have been additions and subtractions of which we actually would never really get to the bottom of, though we find those books, like the Book of Enoch, we find the books and we actually read them. But there's spirit in it. So I find and I draw from that spirit. Where I find when it comes to the New Testament, I see how it has been translated, okay. and what has been done with it to actually colonize us, mm-hmm. and also to tame our spirits and channel us in a certain way, in a specific way. I see the role of Jesus differently.
Yeah.
I see the role of John the Baptist differently. I see the role of Saul, who became Paul, differently. Mm-hmm. I see their roles in bigger than in how they are actually explained by the church. Mm-hmm. Because each time, each one of us, like I say, each one of us have this Moya with Tunywa. And that is the spirit that will then translate that Bible mm-hmm. or any other text that we are actually reading. It will translate it for you. It will translate it for you as well, mm-hmm. for each person in the way that they need to get or receive that message or whatever it is that they need it for.
The practice in this particular ceremony, just to put context, was this a homecoming
mm-hmm.
that was? So whose idea was it to involve a church service in that?
Okay. So what we actually do is in our space, we will sibuke madlozi and we look at God, right? And God and the expression of God in many different ways, including amadlozi, you know. So including amadlozi wethu in how we actually translate them and how we interpret them in the space of God or of godliness. So in our space, we have not just received people who come from the Christian background or whose families are Christians. And in our space, we are in a spiritual space and we understand that religion is a big part of spirituality. And people come from different religions. That is the first step that leads people, are found that leads people towards spirituality. That's the first step that people are able to have a relationship with God in where we are actually coming from. So a lot of people come into our space coming from with a religious background, and the religious backgrounds are different. We have Muslims coming to our space. We've had all sorts of people come into our space. We've had an Indian who was in, who could not even slaughter because of the blood, and but it doesn't mean that you're not going to turn people away, because we actually have isiThunywa, and my calling specifically is about teaching. You know, and because if your calling is about teaching, it means that you have to be a good, an even better student. Yeah. And that is why I found that I am learning from each person that comes in here. I learn and I listen also to where they are coming from. Mm-hmm. And they are different kind of religions.
So does this mean that you don't have a church service for every person who has a homecoming?
We'll have a different kind of church service that will be guided by their family or the bloodline, the lineage. I bring into it my mine, which is more of the, I've learned that it comes from the ZCC background or lineage, and I've never been affiliated to a ZCC church. But you will have noticed that there was a green and a yellow.
Yes, that's where
and
the colors,
though the, those green and yellow,
is that where the colors come from?
Yes, that's where the colors come from.
They come from your connection, spiritual connection with the ZCC church.
That's how I learned that it actually, that spiritual connection is affiliated to the ZCC okay. church. Uh-huh. I've only learned also in my journey, in the same way that yes. you are learning, yeah. that you go about. That's where I learned. But those are the colors that were given to me in many dreams.
Okay.
In many dreams.
So, Salim, you have different colors.
Yes.
You have like comic book colors.
Yeah. A silver and purple and black.
Silver, purple, and black.
Yeah.
And how did you get those colors?
Dreams. So, okay. The silver and purple go together. That came from dreams. And I was begging for those dreams because it was that during the time of our petrol process where it was like, okay, we need your studio colors so we can start making your regalia. And there was nothing. And all my buffers had their colors. And I was passing over time and praying over time, asking for those colors. And I kept dreaming of like birthday celebrations where everything is silver and purple. Yeah. And it just kept happening. And then there was another dream over the ocean. There were balloons. It was silver and purple. And it was always those colors. So I was like, okay, this must be the colors. And then when we made the dress and whatever, I just felt it when I put it on. Mm. I over time, the meanings of the colors came to me over time.
Okay.
And they made sense. The purple had to do with leadership, blah, 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 all of that stuff.
Okay.
But black then is just a color that I chose for myself that I resonate with because it speaks to the unknown and the mystic and all okay. of that.
And then you will see that in our space, we were predominantly white, but with black.
Yes.
Yeah. And that really is just about... It's bigger than purity. It's just about the fact that white is it captures all of the colors.
It's almost like a neutral color.
Yes, mm-hmm. all of the colors are represented in there, and also it is a color that speaks to light.
Mm-hmm.
It speaks to just that invitation.
Mm-hmm.
It's a color that speaks to diversity as well. So that is why we have that. And then the black and white then speaks to the contrast, the balance between the dark and light.
So you guys do not have a church, but you hold church services.
We don't mm-hmm. have a church anymore. We're coming from where we actually
had a church.
A church.
With a name and everything.
Well, we called it Afro Savvy. It was the Afro Savvy Church. Yeah, it was the Afro Savvy Church. So we did have a church where we had gatherings regularly. every Sunday. We had gatherings every Sunday. So we had people coming into our space. But then that is where I actually, like we say, that we keep growing and you need to do these things for the growth to actually happen. That is where I learned that the people that are coming into our space are not all Christian. So we cannot speak to just Christianity in the space. And we need to be more not just diverse, but also just more welcoming, more accommodating. Where it becomes a spiritual home instead of a church. So that's why I kept saying church in inverted commas.
Sort of moving away from your own church structure was a part of your growth.
Yes.
So you had to move away from the church and hold it less formally. As spirit leads, I'm assuming.
Yes, as spirit leads. And also as what we have what we call our homecoming program, which would have been your equivalent to the Sithunywa part in a Pethlweni in an initiation space. So we have that, and ours is it spans over 3 months, or which is a lot of the time that people are as a Pethlweni. So we do that now. Before people can actually even get into a Pethlweni, we want to have that homecoming, which speaks to you actually. It's a study of you. So it's an identity restoration exercise for us. Because a lot of people, when they come into the spiritual space or the spirituality space, they find that there's a lot of there's a lot of building that actually needs to happen, but the building won't happen if you don't know who you are. So we go back to that, where you actually are going to sit with just practicing and knowing that, speaking to the body, mind, and spirit, and where the space of spirit sits, and then how then you elevate that spirit over your mind and your body. How do you grow that spirit? How you recognize your spirit, how we recognize you as a spirit before we recognize you as a human being. That is what that is about. In that, we do a study of self. Study of self will include
lineage mapping,
but that comes after we've dealt with your essence, basically who you are, what makes you up, the makeup of you. And then we look into consciousness and spirit.
Right.
We look at breath work. We look at the things that actually will help you, mindfulness, the things that will help you to come back to yourself. Zanemvula went and studied yoga. Yoga was deemed previously as something for the yes, and we have found what it is in that yogis have found. It's a way to connect to your consciousness and to be mindful. So if you're not living your life mindful or in the present, you're always going to be lost, because you're either living in the past or you're living in the future. So that is the things that lead to depression and anxiety and all of these things. So we find that the work that we need to do is to bring you back to yourself, bring you back to the now, so that we can build from there. And then we go then into lineage mapping. We go into
father wound, mother wound.
Yeah, generational wounds. We go into how it is that your Sithunywa expresses. Yeah, how it expresses. So we find it doesn't express in the same way. So you find that you go also then into your talents or your gifts or we look at it to your strengths and your weaknesses, and in what then channels you towards where you're going, towards where you're supposed to be going. Because what we have found is that all of us come into the space already with a whole mindset of, a lot of the time it's really pushed by survival, it is pushed by capitalism, it is pushed by, but we need to stop that. We need to come, when you come to a Pethlweni, you need to come to a point where you stop. It's about stopping and starting over. Looking at what has actually happened that has actually brought you here, and what it is that you need to unlearn so that you make room for spirit to now lead you for the rest of your journey. And that is what we do in the homecoming program.
So the church service aspect is more regular in that space,
like, yes,
you hold it more regularly for people who are going home.
Yes, what would then be, what informs it also is people also, they, and it's like I said, they express differently. Their spirituality is expressed differently. They are real, and that is what I found, that we cannot then throw out religion. Because that is how people have actually come to that space. And a lot of the time, even as they are learning about spirituality and how spirituality relates to their religion, you find that in that time, there's a lot of conflict, because everybody then is met with what religion actually does and what that religion has actually separated, or is more divisive than it is
inclusive.
So a lot of people find that they need to start off and making a sense of the religion that they were actually practicing, and also how then they go forward, how that religion relates to spirituality. So my space is not about telling people to leave what they actually believe in, because I've learned also that Christianity is what brought me here. So I cannot then throw out Christianity because now I have found spirituality. It was maybe my second step towards spirituality. Yeah. So that is the understanding that I bring to our kind of church, in inverted commas.
Okay, we leave it there.
One of the most beautiful moments in the service that we were attending was when the parents of Ugogo were giving their speech. And this moment caught me.
We were going through a lot. In my family's rich, it's been like 4 years, 3 years, because we're going through a lot. But see, I've only to name in the light. Nabong Yafro safe. Nabong Rakuna.
San Bonan. San Muele Kaya. See Tandu Bong Rakulu. Abantu Bong get Finella Lagle Kaya. Uzo Sinata. Kulenkonzo elanoma thamsana sinyoko mama sekakhulumile, it has been a long journey. You know, when your child is coming to you and crying, and father, you can't help. You know, they call you at the school. She can't concentrate. Then you have to come. I'm not crying because I'm crying. I'm crying because she makes me strong. She's a brave, a young woman who stood up when it's hard, who stood up, I mean, in this time of this era, in this generation, it has been a difficult journey for her, because she had to put shut it down to the life of youth, teenager, and face this journey. It has been a difficult journey for her. Okay, we have to support her, although it was difficult. But I'm going to go to the school, 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 to make it. Ukuthi ngizomsupporta sekakhulile manje wazi izinto engingazazi nami.
What hit me hard about this moment is that ubungoma, or the process of initiation itself, can be alien to many families, and the process can be traumatizing even. It's challenging mentally, physically, financially to have to witness a member of your family, a loved one, and in this case, a child going through initiation. Because of the history that we come from, most Black families are not familiar with the process of a family member going through intwaso. And I think in this moment, I understood that the church service served a bigger function beyond the spiritual. It was a way of holding the family like a hug, like holding their hand through a process that is familiar to them, something that they understand, at least at a very basic level. Church is a part of all our memories. And whether you go or not, there is a part of you that has found comfort in even being, even in you saying that you grew up Christian. There's a comfort, there's a familiarity with church. So as I was listening to the father speak and him finding the courage to be this vulnerable in front of, in many ways, total strangers, the fact that it felt like he was standing in a church offered a kind of comfort that wouldn't have otherwise been possible in such a context. I understand when Gogo Simenjalo speaks about how these things have to be tailor-made for different people and it's not a one-size-fits-all. So it is a church service. It does involve Bible scriptures. It does involve a sermon. But it also involves a coming together. It involves a opening up for the family. This moment offered me an extremely nuanced understanding of why a church service in relation to an initiation ceremony is important, especially in the context of Black families. Just like in the last episode, in this process, I've learned things that I didn't think would be possible to learn, things that weren't even in my frame of mind. I found it very insightful that Ugogo Simenjalo and Gogo Zanemvula were frank about their relationship with Christianity as African spiritual healers. The fact that there's still conflict, that for me speaks to the fact that spirituality is also not necessarily a state of being, but it's also a process. Christianity or the Bible has a place that we cannot run away from as Africans. Despite how it may have come to us, it forms a very solid and very foundational part of how we engage with the divine. And it has been with us for so long that we have generations and generations, ancestors and ancestors who were Christian, and that was their frame of understanding their place in the world. It's easy to identify the gap between the two or the conflict between the two. But in this episode, I've learned that even in that conflict, the two can coexist, and it touches on the idea that two different things can be true at the same time. I think one of the most important things that I've learned through this process is that church is not a building. It's not an establishment. Church is something that exists in the minds of people. It is a spiritual gathering that can happen anywhere, really. And that the conflict is as important as you make it. The conflict is as violent as you can choose it to be. My name is Vusum Zinglande. Thank you for joining me on this episode of The Journey Kwanto. I'd like to thank Gogo Simenjalo and Gogo Zanimvula and their community. It was a truly beautiful experience. I hope to see you on part 3, and with that, I wish you light, I wish you courage, and I wish you all the very best on your journey. Makwande.